Brad Sesmatch Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network Studios.
Good Tuesday. Thanks for being with us. I was at the baseball game yesterday at the Diamondbacks. I'm sitting there with a friend, and we have great seats. Great seats. And the game starts. As I'm sliding into the seat, I sit down. And as I'm sitting down, Corbin is throwing, and I say, I don't know why these guys would want to trade Patrick Corbin. And as I'm sitting down and I'm saying that, like, three guys turn around and look at me. One of them happens to be Mr. Hazen, the general manager, who's sitting, like, directly in front of me. Tony La Russa was, like, two rows, and Roland Heeman, and my friends says to me, because I'm not paying attention, I'm a dope, it's raining, I'm at the Diamondbacks Reds game. My friend says, well, you just, you know, those are the guy I recognize and see all three of them. And so I'm just, you know, doing my thing. That got off to a great start yesterday. It was fun being out at the ballpark. It was. And I stuck around through watching the Reds slot through four errors on the day and a couple Goldschmidt at bats, and I'm good. There's something about, even if the team's not going to be good, I can get past that when I'm able to just take in the sights and sounds. There was nobody there yesterday. Eric, are you going to any games? Are you going to make your way out there this year, or are you going to...
Oh, I'm sure at some point I will. I may go out as just a fan.
Because they call it work when we do our thing.
A working member of the media.
Yeah. There's really no reason to call it work. They're getting their at-bats. I think 3 weeks in is usually... My spring training through the years is... Give them about 2 to 3 weeks and then show up and then go to some people within the clubhouse. There's not many people, I'll be honest with you, there's not many people that I know down there inside and out anymore. That's just changed. And when the team's not good and they're off the radar, but then you go to those people and say, how does so-and-so look? How does such-and-such look? What do you guys think? Who's the player that's below the radar that nobody's talking about, that nobody's giving attention to? And then you go find some scouts, and there's still some people that I'm friends with that are scouts. And you see them sitting down at a game at, you know, Surprise or whatever, behind an empty home plate, and you visit with them a little bit. So it was fun, though. I mean, Goldschmidt looked fine. Yasmani Tomas looked...
Yeah, I guess. I mean, it's practice baseball.
Yeah,
so.
Yasmani Tomas looked... He ran to first base. He didn't waddle. He ran.
That's good. Of all the sports, spring training is the most exciting of the preseason/exhibition games. I will say that.
Well, sure it is. It was, and, you know, they play today. I'm not going to go out to Surprise today, but
except for the always important third NFL
oh, yeah.
exhibition
gotta,
game,
gotta
dun dun dun.
Got to be at that third game. But there was the pace of play yesterday that was in my mind. I'm going to talk about that as the show moves through today, because Major League Baseball, Rob Manfred has been on this whole kick about pace of play, speeding up the game, so on and so forth. So I'm going to get into that a little bit later on. I watched a little bit of Kansas last night. So the number one team in the country looked like they're going to lose. And with Gonzaga losing, right now you'd have to figure that U of A is a two of the U of A, or three. They're one of the top 10 teams in the country, U of A is. Oregon is one of the top 10 teams in the country, in my opinion, even though they've had a couple of scares here recently. And then UCLA with my guy Lonzo Ball. We're going to get into Crazy Parents a little bit further in the show today, because there's more than just... have you seen JaVale McGee's mom?
I saw the headline. I didn't read the backstory. I know there's some war of words between JaVale McGee and Shaq, and now JaVale McGee's mom and Shaq's mom.
So Pam McGee, who played
yep.
in the WNBA, was
yep.
a great player.
Very good player.
Now she's protecting her son, and JaVale McGee's been a bit of a dope when he's played. Shaq does Shaq and the Fool. He usually makes fun of JaVale McGee throughout it. JaVale McGee says, hey, man, why are you making fun of me? Which, why do you need to go on Twitter to do that? That's just let it go. And so then the mom gets involved, and then Shaq's mom gets involved. Whether Shaq's mom really got involved or it was Shaq taking another swipe at him by saying, yeah, my mom told me to quit saying things about you. You know?
Well, part of the beauty of the TNT show is that they not only clown on other NBA players, but they clown on themselves. I mean, Kenny rips on Shaq, and Shaq rips on Kenny, and Chris Webber gets some too, and... It's just part
Charles
of
Charles and Shaq look like they want to fight about
yeah,
every
course.
Other show.
It's
about
just,
every other show they want to put on boxing.
It's part of the beauty of what makes that show and what makes that set so entertaining.
And that's why they win, I don't know, Emmys. You know, that's why they win every year. Because there is the unpredictability of it. Are they wrong in clowning on JaVale McGee? No. No, they're not. But it speaks to a larger issue here, and that is parents. Parents that are going to be protective of their kids is one thing, but parents who aren't living in reality, and I've seen the over-the-top dad for years. I still see over-the-top dads. I sit here on the side. I do my thing. I'll get a note. I'll get a phone call. I'll get a text. I'll get an email from a dad who tells me that his kid deserves more attention than what we here at Sports360AZ.com have been giving them. That happens often with me. And many times I'll go look at the tape. I won't even go to the guys and say, hey, what do you think about this? I'll go to the tape. Guy has two left feet. I'll talk to the kid, or I've talked to the kid. Kid doesn't really like sports. You like sports, sir, more than he likes sports. But dad doesn't want to hear that. Dad doesn't want to hear that. If the dad is coaching a daughter, he is typically way over the top if he's a former football player because he's frustrated he doesn't have a daughter who played football. I've had that happen before. And they take it out on these poor kids in soccer and in basketball. There's plenty of great parents. I mean, Pam McGee's just trying to stick up for her son, but to the point where the moms have to start being seen and heard, where these are grown-ups. When Lonzo Ball's dad becomes the focal point, Lonzo Ball's dad, before we're done with the draft, wherever he goes, if it's not the Lakers, if he comes here to Arizona, there's going to be some interesting sideshows with the dad. I'm trying to think of dads that we've had through the years that have been crazy that have been out here.
Who's going to be a bigger deal on draft night? Lonzo Ball or Lonzo Ball's dad?
The dad.
Probably.
The dad. Lonzo Ball.
He's going to be the one doing all the interviews, and Lonzo will be having that. He'll have the hat on and the really nice suit, but most of it will be like, hey, let's get Lonzo Ball's dad. Yeah, if Lonzo wants to come, that's fine, but let's make sure the dad, the real dad, not someone who looks like his dad, is up on stage.
When I heard the interview yesterday, you played a clip of it, of Lonzo Ball's dad over the weekend. Mm-hmm. I forget the name of the character in Trading Places who owns the McDonald's franchises.
Oh, yes.
That's that was Lonzo Ball's dad. I was hearing him. Yeah, come crazy. On over, son. Have a seat. I'm fine with it to a point. It's just here we are in what is supposed to be on the field, and the dominating stories in the last 48 hours in the news cycle in sports. I mean, the most dominating story overall is still what happened at the Academy Awards the other night at the end. But the overriding deal in sports has been moms and dads in the last 48 hours. It's been a dad for a guard at UCLA. It's been a mom for a player in the NBA. And tonight, Golden State goes to Washington. That's where JaVale McGee played. So I don't know how that's going to be received. Steph Curry missed 11 threes last night. Didn't hit one three last night.
Speaking of the balls.
Lonzo Ball's dad got in his head.
Yeah.
Can you imagine him today?
He probably was watching video of Lonzo Ball's little brother missing all those threes in this playoff game.
Wow. I mean, and that's the thing is, you know, even now the kid who's a sophomore in high school, because he scored 90-some-odd points and he couldn't hit a three-pointer on the broadside of a barn in a playoff game, that kid is now getting attention because the dad has brought it on him about his son. Like, you were at a playoff game last night.
A great one.
State championship. You went to state championships last night.
5A state championship game, double overtime. Sunny Slope knocks off Apollo by a point.
And the game was at GCU.
Packed crowd? Packed crowd. Loud
crowd.
Great
vibe.
Great vibe.
Yeah.
Great place to hold a game like that. Intimate enough, small enough.
Everything we've been
really
saying.
Yeah, really, really loud.
And the guards at Apollo I like a lot.
They're very good.
I like them.
Only one of them played well last night.
Yeah.
The other one didn't. And it was a game where some people afterwards, Brad, thought Arizona high school basketball really needs a shot clock. Because Sunny Slope got the lead, and there was a time where they held a possession for about 3 minutes and 40 seconds before taking a shot.
What do you think about that?
I think there should be a shot clock, too.
How long?
In high school, 35 seconds?
Yeah.
Does that sound about right?
Yeah. I agree with that. I think if you make it 30, because this has been brought up before.
It's a lot like high school football. In Arizona high school football, if you fall behind by two touchdowns going to the fourth quarter, because the quarters are so short, it's really hard for a team that falls behind to come back from two scores in football. And in basketball, it's the same way because you can just bleed the clock and make them foul. And
are you going tonight?
I am going tonight.
So tonight is the 6A championship. Guys, I'll tell you this. I have a sore throat. I don't know if I'm going to go. I'm feeling lousy today, but I'll fight through it. I want to go because it's the 6A championship. And you may not be one that goes to basketball games or high school sports much, but there's certain events through the year that you need to be at if you truly are a hoopaholic. I mean, if you truly are a sports fan, in my view, a fan of sport, and you like to tell everybody that you love to go to games and all that, then you go tonight and you see the highest level of basketball. And no matter who wins tonight between Basha and Corona del Sol, both those teams are going to send players on to play in college. The point guard for Corona del Sol is going to play at U of A next year and play a lot, and maybe somebody who plays in the NBA. The two guard over Corona del Sol is going to go on and play in college as well, and he may go on and beyond high school. Friday night is something I would encourage every fan in the Valley who is a sports fan to go check out Al McCoy going in the Ring of Honor. Al has been the voice of the Suns for 45 years and hopefully continues to do so for another 45 years because he's still really good and there's nobody even close. So those are events that are coming up here. And then we have U of A and ASU on Saturday on the basketball court here in the Valley. It's a great time, but the high school finals, that's where the true hoopaholic sports fan comes out, and that's fun that it's tonight. All right, on the other side, Combine. So there's some things with the Combine as it gets started later this week we want to get to. And then Chris Cartman at about 10:35 from sundevilsource.com with ASU spring football right around the corner. We have not talked anything around ASU football since Letter of Intent Day, and they're getting ready for spring ball, so we'll talk to Chris in about 15 minutes. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sismath. So the Combine is in Indianapolis, and Kent Summers is going to be with us, but he's on a plane, so it gets started tomorrow. And we'll run through the weekend. I am not going this year because I don't see the need to go this year. Unlike last year where there were several players with U of A and ASU, this year, no offense to Zane Gonzalez, but that's it. So, and next year should be loaded. So, it's better just to do it from here than go force the issue. I also have a little bit of some events through the years, they peak out. There's some things in sports that peak out. Like, I think fantasy football might have reached its peak, or they're going to have to reinvent it. I saw quite a bit of data this year that shows that it's not doing what it once did. Gambling is continuing to go up. Fantasy football, not quite so much. I don't know if the Combine is everything that it is for getting content, for actually getting the truth versus just going there to say you're there. It's kind of like going to watch the Cubs play and not have a ticket. You can't go inside and watch them play. We go to the Combine, guys, just so you know, and we've gone every year in the company. We don't get to see anything inside. That's all the NFL people. So all you're doing is media interviewing media unless they bring out some players.
It's like covering an event but not being able to see the event.
Right.
Unless you've been to Indianapolis and you've experienced the Combine for 4 or 5 days like you did, it's hard to explain to people. Like, we don't get... They're brought back.
What do you mean you don't want to go to the Combine?
They're brought back through curtains. We don't get to see them on the playing field. We have to watch them on the NFL Network, just like everyone at home does.
And it's a bunch of dudes that are eating bad food, that are sitting around on a chair for 9 hours watching people run 40-yard times, and you're just hoping to get an interview. Now, last year I had a great time because there was player after player. And sure, it's great to see the Peters of the world in person, Peter King, and people have done stuff with us. But, I just don't get it. I'm bringing up that maybe the Combine has jumped the shark by this latest announcement from Adidas. Did you hear about this, the island?
I did not.
So, okay, this is good. I'm glad you didn't. So, Adidas, this week at the NFL Scouting Combine is offering an island just under $1 million for the player that runs fast enough who is wearing Adidas footwear on the 40-yard dash. So they got to break Chris Johnson's mark at 4.24 from the 40, wearing Adidas shoes, and they win an island.
I like it. I like the incentive.
Okay, so
I doubt anyone's going to break that record, but good luck to all the combine participants.
Okay, so in my view, Adoree Jackson is on my radar. Now, I don't know the rest of these guys inside now, but I've seen Adoree Jackson at USC.
He can run fast.
Adoree Jackson can run fast. Can run fast. But if you have to get an island out there to get guys to go wear the gear, and first of all, what do you think Under Armour and Nike are saying about this?
They're probably snickering a bit.
Because
or they're saying, wow, that's a really creative marketing plan.
And how many guys that have not signed, and guys, I know this is back business for you. This is the business side of sports. All these players are going to have their own shoe deal. So how many of these guys have their shoe deals that they signed like a month ago with Nike and are saying, damn, I would have won an island. You know, why did I jump at the first opportunity? I don't know. Does it sound fine, good? Is the island on an oil well? Is the island on a volcanic pit? Is the island, is it underwater for 8 months out of the year when the tide comes? I don't know any of this stuff. How big is the island? Anything along those lines. Don't know any of it. But yeah, so people will want to watch who is on the island. And there's going to be guys that may have already said, oh, I'm a Nike guy and I'm a Reebok guy. And I can't now try to win an island. So I don't know how many people are going to do this. I know for me that I read all these mock drafts. Mock drafts produce lots of clicks. There's lots of interest in mock drafts. That's great. If you believe any mock drafts sitting here in February, there's a game to it. Christian McCaffrey is not in several mock drafts. Well, why is that? Well, oh my gosh, I can't believe that Christian McCaffrey is nowhere to be found. Well, what do you know? In mock draft number 2, out of 9 that they publish, Christian McCaffrey may show up at like 23rd. Then he may drop, and then he may drop out. And when you have all these quarterbacks in mock drafts, so mock drafts are just something to kill time. Yeah, it's fun. It's like fantasy football to a point. But I really like the draft nicks, the guys that will sit there on draft day at a draft event. And they've got their draft in front of them, and they've got notes that they've made, and they've tried to figure it all out. I'll give you an example. So DeShone Kizer at Notre Dame, his stock this year is not as high as it was maybe a year ago. He threw 19 picks this year. That's an inordinate amount of numbers for a quarterback to throw interceptions, isn't it? In a college season, 19 interceptions, that's a lot. Now, what were the cases of those interceptions? What down? What distance? What type of wide receiver did he have to work with this year? What kind of offensive lineman did he have to work with this year? Not just he threw 19 picks, so he must not be a good quarterback. Maybe, I don't know, he had no time to throw the freaking football. Maybe, I don't know, he had receivers that had thumbs as trying to catch footballs and they couldn't catch. So this is just one part of the process. And when you are going to the combine and you're an NFL person, and I've interviewed enough of them through the years, that they have their board set when they go there. And their board, meaning they have the players that are ranked by what round that they're going to be selected in. And there's a flow there of position players. You know, you go through your quarterbacks, you go through your running backs, you go through your wide receivers. Then you have the whole draft as to who's the best overall player in the draft. Who is the number one overall player in the draft? In my view, the best player that I saw was Myles Garrett at Texas A&M, and it wasn't even close. Now, these quarterbacks, you know, you start pulling back the curtain a little bit on them, and we'll watch them throw this week. But really, guys, when Jared Goff, all the lead up to Jared Goff was he's going to be this, he's going to be that. What did Jared Goff do this last year? He didn't do anything. When Carson Palmer graduated or left USC, when Carson Palmer turned pro, go look at Carson Palmer's numbers when he left USC. I wouldn't say that they're anything over the top. They were great, but there were some flaws there. All these guys have flaws. All these guys have nicks. I just don't see enough games out of Mitch Trubisky. I think Deshaun Watson has played in some big, 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 big games on the big, big, big stage. Does that mean that he can play at the next level and make it happen? I bring this up because the Cardinals are going to be looking at these guys. They have to be looking at these guys. They should have looked at them last year, and maybe Steve did. This is really Steve Keim's time to shine. Starting around March 1st, what did Steve Keim do last year? What did Steve Keim do the year before? Doesn't mean it always works out, but last year at this time, nobody had Chandler Jones coming on the Cardinals' radar. And what happened? Steve Keim pulled it off, got Chandler Jones here. What's happened the last few years in the draft? He found a guy named David Johnson, so on and so forth. This is Steve. It's not Steve in September and October. It all adds up for Steve. He's doing his due diligence and work with the scouting department. But really, here in March and in April, this is where Steve is the focal point. You know, Bruce Arians factors in a little bit, but this is really Steve's show. There's nobody else I want to hear from, really, that is going to give me insight on it than Steve and his staff. That's it. There were some interesting news and notes around the NFL. Yesterday, I would say interesting that the Cardinals put a franchise tag on Chandler Jones. It was a non-exclusive tag, which I thought was interesting. The fact that Chandler Jones gets tagged is not a surprise to anybody. How does he react to that? He's got $14.5 million reasons to figure it out for himself. I'm sure he's going to be just fine. But just here in the last 10 minutes, Adrian Peterson was released. Adrian Peterson gets released by the Minnesota Vikings. So what does this mean? Well, it means the Dallas Cowboys are going to have Adrian Peterson on their roster, you would think. You would think that Adrian Peterson, now that, and he could go back to Minnesota, but I don't see any way, shape, or form that happens. It's best to move on. Adrian Peterson becomes available, and if you're looking for a running back, or maybe you have a team and you say, Adrian Peterson at this stage of his career would give us an added dimension, even though we already have very good running backs. Can never have enough running backs, right?
He's a situational guy, though, at best. There are so much wear on those tires because he had so many carries and he left Oklahoma early. It seems like Adrian Peterson's been in the NFL for 20 years.
Forever. But if you're sitting there and you're for any team, you're the Arizona Cardinals. You don't need Adrian Peterson, or do you, as a veteran backup? I mean, nobody needed Chris Johnson. I'm just saying that you have to kick the tires on every last person who becomes available. All of you that hated Peter's suggestion of Jay Cutler, Peter even doubled down on it again in his column this week. Again on Monday, he brought up why Jay Cutler to the Cardinals makes too much sense. Doesn't mean he knows something that's going on over here, but I'm kind of surprised he went back to it. Same thing with Cutler. Same thing with Adrian Peterson. If you're Steve Keim, and it may be a two-second conversation, no, we move on. It may not even be a conversation. But if you've got to have depth at running back, and let's be honest, David Johnson carried the ball a ton last year. Chris Cartman on the other side. We're going to switch gears over to ASU. We've not talked ASU football in quite some time, and I want to dive over there for a few minutes. Spring ball's right around the corner. We'll have Chris Cartman, SunDevilSource.com, publisher, editor on the other side. I'm Brad Sussman. Arizona State opens spring football here in a couple of weeks. Let's have Chris Cartman jump on board. SunDevilSource.com, great information, great insight as Todd Graham gets ready to bring his team on the field for 15 practices. The spring game, April 15th at Sun Devil Stadium. Which quarterbacks are leaving? Okay, so let's just get the 800-pound elephant out of the room. From your view, as we're sitting here in the next month to 2 months, who's not going to be here when they go to camp in August?
You're infamous for this stuff, Brad. Look, you got to say Bryce Perkins would be the most likely to transfer. I think the transition to Billy Napier gives him another look, and so that could potentially help. But Bryce Perkins was on his way out the door last August, and it's going to be even harder now with Blake Barnett in the picture. I think with Brady White, you have a guy who's not going to be able to participate in spring ball because of his foot injury and surgery that he had. And even though he is going to be cleared, he believes, for all of the summer conditioning and then camp beyond that, I think he has a tougher path now as a result of this. Dylan Sterling Cole has a redshirt year available to him, but if he ends up third on the depth chart, let's say behind Barnett and Manny Wilkins, maybe he considers moving closer to home. I do believe ultimately you're going to have probably two of these quarterbacks at a minimum who are going to end up elsewhere.
I had Rick Neuheisel on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he's now with the SEC with CBS. So he's seen Blake Barnett, actually not just in game for as limited a time as he had at Alabama, but on the practice field. And he said to me, Chris, that the arm strength of Blake Barnett at the time that he saw him was a concern. What are you hearing in that regard to Blake Barnett?
I think I've seen him in camp settings and in games. I think he has a bigger arm than any of the guys that are currently on the roster at ASU, with the possible exception of Sterling Cole. He's got a little bit of an elongated delivery, but he still gets the ball out relatively quickly. He's a longer guy, 6'4", and long-limbed, and so that's something that he has to work on. But he makes all the throws, Brad. This is a guy who's not going to have a problem getting the ball down the field, locating it, some of your longer out routes to the far side. He's going to be able to do all those things within the offense that they're running at ASU. Really, this is going to come down to what's between the ears, the ability to process quickly. Is he going to be able to see the whole field? Is he going to be able to operate functionally? Is he going to be able to not turn the football over? Those are the three key check marks that I would look for this spring.
And you and I can talk all day long, and the coaches can talk all day long, and they'd have a better idea on this about what Blake Barnett can and can't do. I guess I look at it and say he can do all sorts of great things, but if he has no one to throw to consistently and his offensive line cannot keep him upright consistently, it's kind of like DeShone Kizer 2 years ago. He looked great, and then he loses his tackles, he loses his wide receiver, and all of a sudden he can't play dead. So let's get into that from a skills point of view, and the people around Barnett, assuming he's the guy, do they have enough?
I believe so. You look at N'Keal Harry, probably going to be an All-American before he's done at ASU. He was a freshman All-American last year, exceeded my expectations, at least set a record for receptions among rookies at ASU. You have two transfers that are going to be really key to watch here in the spring. They lit it up last year while sitting out, and that's Ryan Newsome and John Humphrey. And these are speed guys. Newsome is more of a slot receiver. Humphrey is a 4-3, 40 guy on the edge. I think you're going to see those guys out there. You have Jalen Harvey, who was the second leading receiver last year, who's back as a junior. He's a physical, tough player. Of course, you have Demario Richard and Kalen Ballage to help buoy your offense from a run standpoint. And you make a great point, Brad, about the offensive line. That's like essential. And what we've seen really in the Pac-12 is there have been no players in the last 5 years, until one this year, who was younger than a junior, who was an all-league offensive lineman. And ASU, even though it had two senior starters, they were run-of-the-mill type players, not really a big challenge to replace. And I like some of the younger guys that they have on the roster. Quinn Bailey, Sam Jones, those guys started as sophomores. Zach Robertson was a part-time starter as a sophomore. I look at Steve Miller, a guy you're very familiar with, out of Gilbert, Brad. I think he's got a world of potential. I think as this group matures in 2017, and then especially in 2018, they're going to be much better in those areas that you talked about, protecting the quarterback and being able to establish the run game.
Well, I think your point, Chris, about being able to hand the ball off to Richard and Ballage is key. Do you see them the same exact as last year, or do you see one maybe doing a little bit more a year later? Is it all? It can't always be the same, or maybe it can with those two behind him.
Well, look, I think Billy Napier helps Kalen Ballage. Napier's coming from a pro-style background. Of course, Alabama ran spread with Jalen Hurts last year, and it made a lot of sense to do so. But he's going to be able to go heavier sets. Kalen Ballage is a pro-style running back, a toss sweep, inside power, a build-up runner, probably better with a quarterback who's under center. And we may see a little bit of a move in that direction, or at least some incorporation of those things schematically in a way that benefits Ballage. There's a nice contrast style-wise between Ballage and Demario Richard, who's more of a gap scheme is a zone inside runner. And so I think obviously you have the capability there if your offensive line can allow it and your quarterback can enable it with his ability to give you balance, and being able to take the top off the defense with some of these receivers that ACU has is also really important. I think they do have the tools. And you look at J.J. Wilson also, Brad, a guy who probably was underutilized last year by Chip Lindsey as a tight end. He's a dynamic weapon at that position who I think will really step out of the shell this season.
Whenever it's National Letter of Intent Day, we hear all about all the holes being plugged and great talent, great skill, great this, great that. Last 2 years, the defense has not been great in any way, shape, or form. Here in spring football, who are you looking at that's got to move forward in this? It's easy to say in March, we've got all the pieces figured out, but you know, you got to see it on the field to see truth. Didn't see it last year. Who are you looking at?
Well, absolutely, their key is in the secondary. This is the worst pass defense in the NCAA FBS 2 years in a row, 128 out of 128. And so you look at guys who have a chance to either build off of a transitional junior college season, like Maurice Chandler, who became a part-time starter. I think he has a chance to take a step in the right direction. And then I look at Chase Lucas. They almost burned his redshirt year. Todd Graham told me about 4 or 5 games into the season, we nearly played him. Chase Lucas was undersized. He arrived at ASU at 160 pounds or so. He told me the other day he's 182 pounds now, Brad. There's a homogeneous type of a defensive backfield that Phil Bennett had in Baylor, where they had 5 defensive backs. They were similarly sized. They played this base nickel. Chase Lucas fits very well into that sort of a philosophy. He's a guy who can play on the field side safety. He can play corner. He can play nickel. He's very versatile. And you'll get that additional year of experience that Kareem Orr and Armand Perry have behind them. And so I think those 4 guys are going to be a little bit stabilizing. I think Robbie Robinson could do a little bit more as a sophomore. And there's a few other players that they're going to be now adding to the mix. Of course, I think Alex Perry is a freshman who won't be here in the spring, of course, but Armand Perry's brother, 4-star player, one of the better corner prospects in the West in the 2017 class. I think he has a chance to make an impact. Now, what they really where they missed, Brad, is they should have taken one or two more junior college quarterbacks, maybe even a D1 post-grad transfer. And I think they're working to try to figure something out there.
A year ago, you accurately pointed out that they were a season away. I mean, you were just staunch in your belief that last year was going to be a transition year. Are you still of that opinion coming into 17 that we're still in transition in watching Arizona State? Or do you look at it and say, you know what, they've got enough pieces, they've got it figured out?
This is a talent game. Ty Graham arrived, he had about 5 players who were 4 or 5-star rated prospects when they were coming out of school. Now they have 25. And that roster still isn't mature. That's actually going to be even probably higher in 2018. But they just didn't have the horses last year, and especially not with the quarterback situation, what it was, the injuries, you know, 3 guys getting hurt at that position. If they're able to get better play out of their quarterback, whether that's Blake Barnett, who I think is probably the odds-on favorite, or Manny Wilkins shows substantial improvement and somehow ends up getting that job. And then they're able to stabilize their secondary and some of the big plays. I think those are the keys. I think ASU will be a little bit better this year, but not to where people are beating the doors down about the program. Maybe 6 or 7 wins, you get to a bowl game, but then you have most of these guys returning again in 2018 when you can finally get back to where Todd Graham was in 2013 and 2014.
Okay, that said, Chris, the obvious question is, if he wins 6 or 7 games, is he on a warm seat right now, or the seat is completely cold? There's not a chance, no matter what happens this coming year, that they make a change.
It's a little bit warm, and if it's 6 wins, that's going to be a question mark. I think 7 is probably safe. Todd Graham was smart, and he bought himself some time with the addition of Phil Bennett to be his defensive coordinator. That's an elder statesman sort of a figure to take over the defense, and Todd Graham has to be hands-off now, especially on game days with that, because that's where he ran into a lot of problems with tinkering, with his players all the way up to the snap and getting guys discombobulated. It really was a problem the last 2 years. And if Phil Bennett is able to sort of solidify things there, Ray Anderson is happy with the direction of Todd going this route. I think that Ray sees this as being sort of a maturation of Todd at a place he's never been before, going into the sixth year at a program and certainly at this level. And so I think that's one of the keys that we have to watch for. But definitely, if it's anything less than 7 wins, he's in trouble.
Before I let you go, I'm curious your view, because you've seen all the games, you've been a part of this program, but you also look at the opposition. You saw Patrick Mahomes and you saw Davis Webb, correct, this last season?
Yes.
So when you're looking at those two quarterbacks with the combine getting started later this week, and I'm hearing an awful lot of buzz that Davis Webb is the guy below the radar, the Dak Prescott of this year, and everybody's going to search for that guy, and that Mahomes is somewhat the wild card in all of this. I'm just curious from your point of view and seeing those two quarterbacks. I respect your opinion. What do you think?
I prefer Webb. I think a lot of arm talent. I think he gets the ball out quickly. He's accurate down the field. I think he has the wherewithal to stand up to the scrutiny at the NFL level. With Patrick Mahomes, great athletic talent for his size. My concern about him, and I think if you watch him really carefully, he's hesitant to use the pocket properly. He doesn't really step up into the pocket. There's too much space there. And so that's a real problem that he has. He wants to tend to bleed out and escape. And I think that guys like that have a hard time making that transition in the first couple of years. And by the way, I think out of all these guys, the best one might be Luke Falk, who's returning for his senior season at Washington State.
No, that's a good call on that front. I appreciate your time as always. Thanks.
Thanks, Brad. Appreciate it.
Chris Cartman there, SunDevilSource.com, inside with ASU opening spring football here in a couple of weeks. I've not talked some ASU football in quite some time. U of A is already underway. They started a couple of weeks back. The spring game for ASU is on April 15th at Sun Devil Stadium. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussmat. So this last week, I was with some TV executives, and they were talking about how the Coyotes' ratings are starting to show up. You know, that they were flatline, nobody was watching, and just people around town, they're letting me know what's going on out there. And the Coyotes are kind of interesting to watch. Not kind of, they are interesting to watch. They play Boston tonight. I think at 4:30 it is. But I'm curious if the Suns are going to start to become the rubberneck train wreck, got to turn and see if they're losing must-see TV. I'm curious to know, in the last, well, I think they have 23 games left in this season as they pursue Lonzo Ball. Eric, you would have to think the numbers are going to grow, right?
Yeah, unless people have just completely checked out.
But if you're a fan,
there's a lot of options next month.
No, I know, but if you're
for TV,
if you're the fan of the Suns, if you're like, that's my team, and you want them to go get Lonzo Ball, then don't you, every time they play, want to watch to see if they've got it figured out?
Yes.
So like, I was sitting with a guy yesterday who's involved with a lot of the sports teams, and you know, he said matter of factly to me, boy, the Suns almost screwed it up the last couple games, you know? And he didn't even chuckle when he said it. Like, it's known out there. They are in tankapalooza mode.
They've got a lot of work to do, though, if they want that number one pick.
Well, yeah, I understand that, but they've got to at least be in the conversation. They've got to get, the first step is lose.
Yeah.
Next step is ping pong balls.
Yep.
Next step is have a little bit of luck.
Which the Suns never do in the
draft. Suns never have luck in the draft. Send me.
Yeah. I mean, they did get Amari Stoudemire.
The look on your face.
They did get Amari Stoudemire. So that was luck, because nobody, I mean, the Suns probably didn't even know how good he was going to be.
But
Devin Booker. But for the most part, yeah, the Suns have been unlucky around the draft.
Is it unlucky or just not competent?
Yes.
Okay. So
a little bit of both.
So tonight's the high school finals. If I feel better, I'm going to go over to that. Right now I'm saying I'm not. I'm checked out. I'm not going to go. But I really do want to go see that game tonight. I can see a little bit of the Coyotes at 4:30, and then I don't need to see the Suns early because the way it works in the NBA, Adam Silver's right. They should charge for like the last 5 minutes of games. He's right because a team can lead by 20 and they can still lose by 20 in the NBA. They just take the foot off the pedal, and I think that there's guys that are checked out. There's bad lineups. What I want to see is I just want to see the bad lineups be put out there. You know, Earl Watson needs to put out some lineups. Devin Booker, you don't look well tonight. Have a seat. Eric Bledsoe, I mean, go grab a guy or go just grab a couple guys early in this game. Come sit next to me.
Muscle soreness.
Muscle tightness. Flu.
Illness. Yeah, illness.
Flu-like symptoms.
Flu-like symptoms.
Seen mm-hmm. that one? Mm-hmm. That's another word for hangover.
Back spasms.
Back spasms, another word for was out with a girl late.
Right.
No, I think we've...
Hence the spasms in the back.
Well, sure. That's good. You know, if it's coyotes, it's lower body contusion, upper body contusion.
Or even just lower body injury.
Lower body injury.
That really narrows it down.
Yeah.
So somewhere below the waist, he's hurting with something.
That is their deal.
That's consistent, though, with the NHL.
No, it is. So. That's their thing. But I do believe that every game here forth, it's... You can be all into the NFL draft with the Cardinals. I don't think they're going to take a quarterback in the first round, so I'm not that interested in what they do in the first round. I'm really not, guys. If you want me to pick a player, I can go talk to guys and throw names out there and all that. And we'll put guests on, and we'll break it down on the TV show. That's fine. This, though, the chance of getting – it's like the Coyotes a couple of years ago where they thought they'd have the number one overall pick, and it didn't happen for them. And the lead balloon that just came crashing down on them. I don't enjoy watching this nonsense, but I think you have to go through it and embrace it. The ineptitude of the franchise, if they go out and win like four in a row, it's over at that point. At that point, if they go out and they go on a bit of a win streak, but man, if they set themselves up right here and get blown out tonight in Memphis, a team that hasn't beat them, and then they come home and they have a back-to-back, and there's no way they're beating Oklahoma City and Russell Westbrook on Friday night, even though it's a great Al McCoy's night. I talked to Al yesterday. Al's going to the Suns Ring of Honor. Those of you that have been here all your lives, you know how big of a deal this is. Those of you that have come in the last 5 to 10 years may not be that big of a deal, and I get it. There was a time where Al McCoy did all the games on TV. In my opinion, he should still be doing the games in simulcast. I don't care that it's 2017. Al is the voice of the Suns. End of statement. Nobody else. Nobody. It comes close. So yesterday we went through about a half-hour podcast. I'm going to post later today on the site, getting ready for this weekend. Now, he has no idea who is presenting him. Al said to me in the podcast that he has been the one that has presented every player that has gone in the Suns Ring of Honor. So it got me to thinking... Well, who is the right person to present Al McCoy into the Suns Ring of Honor? What would tickle Al McCoy's fancy more than blank being the person that puts him in?
I've got a name.
Now, the name is obvious to me, but go ahead. What's yours?
He's already in the Ring of Honor. He wore a suit to a lot of games when he was a part of the Suns organization.
Okay, so it's the owner.
His initials are J and C.
Okay, and C, and you and I are right there. Now, would Robert pick up the phone and call Jerry?
Yes.
The answer to that, from what I'm told, is no.
Really?
Somebody with Robert would pick up the phone.
Oh, gotcha. Okay. But the dots would be connected.
The dots would be connected. You would think. Now, let me throw in a couple other names
at you.
Okay,
yeah, I'm game.
So Friday night, it's halftime. Al McCoy walks out on the court. And Steve Nash takes the microphone.
Good name.
Because here's somebody that Al adored. I had somebody yesterday I was talking to that's been in the Valley all his life. And he said Al has a real affinity for Walter Davis. Walter Davis is a great name for those of us that are above the age of, what do you think, 35,
yep,
40?
Yep. I was just a little kid when Sweet D played. But he's in the Ring of Honor, correct?
He's in the Ring of Honor, but is there enough there? Because the Suns and the NBA are all wound up about getting younger. We got to get younger. Now, could you go overboard in a good way? And could you have Steve Nash hand the microphone off to Grant Hill, who hands the microphone off to Charles Barkley, who hands the microphone off to Amari Stoudemire.
I like that.
Could you play all the hits in one stand? To Danny Manning, to whomever that you look at. Al said in the podcast that he's had 11 color analysts. I couldn't name all of them because I haven't been here that long. I came when Keith Erickson was doing the games. And could you have all 11? Well, Hot Rod Hundley's not alive anymore. So there's 10 of them. It's a really interesting, it'd be very interesting to see what the Suns do. If it's Robert Sarver taking the microphone to put Al in the Ring of Honor, that may be very appropriate for the present day people that have been there. That may sound like a great idea to everybody in the room, or not everybody, but most of the people in the room that have been there for the last 5 years, 8 years. I would not think that'd be the right way to go. I'm not going to rip the team if they do that. I get it. Let's put Robert out there. It's with Al. This will build up Robert's image. Robert's taking some hits. Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. To me, it's like obvious. It's got to be Jerry. And I'm actually seeing him later this week, and I'm going to ask him about it. He's not going to be on the show, but I'm going to be at a place where we're going to see each other.
Does your gut tell you Al retires at the end of this year?
I know people have been asking that.
My gut says yes.
No. Listen to the podcast.
Okay.
Because
I mean, I heard it, but I didn't hear it, if
I think
that makes sense.
Well, here's the deal on that.
I've become the associate producer to the AMP.
Well, here's the deal.
Which is fine.
Here's the deal on Al retiring. Everybody wants to kick out of the curve. Not everybody. There's people in our industry, or there's people in the NBA that, you know, they have their own self-interest. They want to be the next in line. That job, there's been, I can't tell you, dozens of people that have lined up for that gig. And it's almost embarrassing because he's the guy. So rather than go sneak around or go try to get your name on the front of the line or go get the e-ticket or the early pass, just let it, you know, let it handle itself. In talking to him, I think he still has plenty of game left. But again, he's on radio. It's a platform that's not what it once was. Anybody who tries to tell me that, you're just fooling yourself. It's not. So we're going to put that up later today. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic AZ Central Sports. There's plenty of content up on our website. It's Sports360AZ.com. We're Arizona-centric. Our TV show tonight on Fox Sports Arizona. We have 14 airings over the next couple of days. And very much looking forward to that with Fox Sports Arizona. Jared Nielsen is our chairman of the board. He played a little hurt today. Eric Sorensen is our senior executive vice president of everything. He never plays hurt. I played a little hurt today, too. Thanks for being with us. We'll